Hey, welcome back for another episode of Legal Marketing Radio. In this week's episode, I kind of feel like we're getting back to our roots a little bit. In the first couple episodes of this podcast, we really kind of focused on topics related to content marketing and content creation. And, you know, that was just kind of natural for me because that's kind of my everyday role and area of specialty here at LaFleur. I'm the managing editor here at LaFleur, one of two managing editors, actually. And so content marketing is just the topic that's closest to my heart and on my brain, you know, most days. But as we started going along, you know, I realized we needed to branch out and talk about other topics too. So in the subsequent episodes, we tried to tackle topics in other areas of the digital marketing picture. You know, we did an episode on PPC, an episode dedicated to SEO. We did a kind of a cool case study that was more on the PR end of things. So for this episode, I wanted to kind of circle back and try to take on another topic from the content marketing world just to keep that side of things going as well. So what we decided to do is we decided to do an episode I call The State of Content Marketing 2017. And really what this episode is about is we're just going to break down some of the major trends and developments in the content marketing world that are shaking things up. And then we're just going to talk about, you know, do these trends matter for law firms? You know, maybe not every trend in content marketing is something that law firms need to worry about or that's going to give the best ROI for their business. So when we did this episode, as is often the case with our content team, we really got going and we dug into this topic and our discussion ended up being a little longer than we expected. So what we're actually going to do is we're going to break this episode up into two parts. So overall, we talk about six different trends. And this week's episode is going to feature three of those trends. And then the next episode that comes out in 2 weeks, we'll wrap things up with the other three. So since we already know that we had a lot to talk about in this episode, let's just get started with the discussion right away. First, though, just a quick reminder. If you're not familiar with LaFleur, we're your full-service legal marketing partner. And we work with law firms across the country to deliver data-driven digital marketing solutions that promote their brands and grow their businesses. To learn more, just visit our website at LaFleur.marketing. That's L-A-F-L-E-U-R. Marketing. Okay, let's go over to the podcast studio with Dave and Kyle from the content team and get started with this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio. Okay, this week here in the podcast studio, we've got a couple of guests. We kind of got the LaFleur content team back together, as it were. One of our most frequent guests, our content director, we've got Dave Vandewaal here in the studio.
Hey, Stephen. How are you doing?
I'm great. And also, coming from Portland, Oregon, our third musketeer, as it were, we've got Kyle McCarthy. Kyle is one of the two managing editors here at LaFleur, along with me. How are you doing, Kyle?
I'm doing very well. Glad to hear your crisp, beautiful voices.
Yeah, thank you. Since last time you were on, we've kind of upgraded our recording setup, so hopefully people will get, you know, a better sense of your mellifluous tones.
Sounds good.
Cool. Okay, so what we want to talk about this week, we kind of want to, I titled this podcast episode, The State of Content Marketing 2017, which is a little bit dramatic, right? But I just thought it would be a good occasion to kind of talk about some of the trends that are going on in the content marketing world. Because it's always changing, right? And marketers are always looking for the newest way or ways that they can, you know, find the audience that they want and really attract attention for their clients. So I kind of want to break down some of these trends that we're seeing in the content marketing world and then talk about, you know, do they apply to law firms? Do law firms need to pay attention to these trends? So I, you know, asked you guys too to kind of brainstorm some trends. So, you know, feel free to chime in as you see fit. But, you know, this is my topic of choice. So I'll start us off. One content marketing trend that I feel like you'll see if you look up any kind of list of content marketing trends like this anywhere for any industry is visual content and most specifically video. And I brought just a couple of kind of eye-opening statistics regarding video. For one, in June 2017, so just a little more than a month ago, a white paper from the web company Cisco, they published an estimate that by 2021, video will make up 82% of all consumer internet traffic. That's 82% of the traffic on the web. Isn't that a wild statistic?
You just blew my mind recently with a stat in one of your blog posts about YouTube, that YouTube is the number two search engine.
It actually is. Yeah,
that one. It's number one on desktop.
Yep. Yeah, number one on desktop. So, you know, mobile is one thing, but like, yeah, among desktop consumers who we find, you know, law firms have a little bit higher ratio of desktop visitors generally. Video is enormous. But that statistic too, it's 82% of all internet traffic. And then here's another report. This one's from a report from Google. Almost 50% of consumers look for videos related to a product or service before they visit a store. So, you know, what is it about video? I mean, first of all, I would say, just from my perspective, that I don't think this is so much a matter of, you know, a rise in people's love for video. If we, you know, you, me, and Kyle, Dave, we're all kind of, I would say, you know, people who are oriented toward the written word. We're all writers. Probably a lot of our friends, you know, read more so than the average person. But still, like, among people you know, what percentage of people would you say read books on a regular basis, you know?
It's very few.
It's pretty few, right? Yeah. Now, on the other hand, what percentage of people that you know watch movies and TV?
Right, everybody.
100%, right, of everybody. And that's been that way for, like, forever. You know, I mean, it's just people just have a relationship with – that's probably as goes back from – whenever moving pictures became, you know, the entertainment of choice in the United States. So it's not really a matter of, you know, people love video more than they ever did. It's just that, you know, video has become such a more democratic kind of medium, you know, kind of a populist medium. It's just available to people. People can shoot videos and promote them in ways that they just couldn't before. So, you know, in the past, you needed to have access to an expensive camera and, you know, all sorts of editing techniques and things and editing tools. And now you just need to have, you know, some people do it with a smartphone and just, you know, some simple software. So I think it's just a matter of, you know, video has just become so much more accessible. And in terms of, you know, why is it important? I mean, for a law firm, I think it's crucial because, you know, video kind of humanizes products and companies. I mean, it creates, you know, these kind of visual narratives that people remember, and it just puts a face to your firm. So I think that for most law firms, this is something that, you know, those statistics that I visited earlier show that, you know, it's something, it's not a luxury at this point in terms of content marketing. Video needs to be, you know, a component of your strategy is what those statistics say to me.
Yeah, I think it's where the future's headed as well. You know, you see functionality for video expanding on a lot of different platforms. Facebook recently launched their auto captioning, so that people can watch videos silently in their news feed that'll be automatically captioned by Facebook robots. And so you see, this is where a lot of the platforms where you're going to see video, where they're expanding their functionality for it to prepare and say, hey, we're going to get more of this, so we should probably have a system in place to, you know, for example, with Facebook, auto-caption these videos so people can still watch them even if their sound is off. And so it's definitely where the future is headed.
I also think it's really beneficial in the sense that I think that probably all of us have that friend or those friends or that entire crew of people that we associate with who, when they read content online, they are more inclined to basically read the headline and at best read in that F pattern that we sometimes talk about. So maybe the lead, and then they slowly kind of skim down the page. And then the problem with that is that then, you know, given Facebook, Twitter, or whatever, is that they will then share their opinion on a topic without having, you know, read in depth about that material. So I think that one way in which video could be helpful, especially video that has, you know, automatic transcription and captioning, would be to kind of blur that line or maybe merge those two lines in the fact that people are more inclined to watch video, but if there's also a written component, maybe they'll actually ingest the information a little bit better, watch the whole way through, because we definitely know from the statistics that they don't read the whole way through. So I think that this could be beneficial for lawyers, not only in the fact that it has become more accessible for them to produce video, but also that it's a lot more accessible for their audiences, and they're a lot more likely to actually get the main thrust, the gist, and additionally the details of a given topic rather than by reading.
Yeah, they're not going to bounce around a video like they do a piece of content. You know, they're going to watch a video all the way through. If you skip 5 seconds of video, you're going to miss quite a bit. Whereas if you skip a headline and skip a paragraph in a piece of content, you might not miss as much.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know of any particular statistics that, you know, show exactly how many people make it to the end of a video, but I'd have to imagine it's a lot higher than the meager numbers that we know get through a particular piece of written content, right? I mean, I generally, if I click on a video, watch the whole thing through, and I even don't do that with a lot of news articles. I mean,
right.
You know, you skim the stuff that you want if you're busy and you go on. I want to return to a point Dave made too, that, you know, this is kind of the, video is kind of the medium of the future in terms of, especially we see this among younger audiences, right? That, I mean, they really expect video from the sites that they're visiting and from the, you know, the companies they buy their products from. And, you know, we've kind of talked about this before, but I think law firms, this will probably be kind of a recurring theme too, maybe in this episode, but because law firms have like an older demographic in general, you know, people in their 40s and 50s are probably often their target market, maybe their 30s. I think they tend to be a little bit behind on these kind of trends. You know, they probably have been a little bit insulated from the full impact of how important video is for marketing, but that's not going to be the case. You know, if you want to start attracting, you know, the millennial consumers who are reaching that age now where they're going to need legal services, they're going to respond to video so much more strongly, and it's going to make a big difference for the kind of engagement you get with your content. So overall, let's say we just kind of just for fun, you know, rate these trends out of, you know, a 1 to 10 scale. What would you guys give video? I would kind of give it like a 10 in terms of importance, basically the highest.
Yeah, I would too. Definitely. I think video is a crucial element of people's marketing strategies going forward.
11.
Kyle, you just had to, didn't you?
Dialing it up.
This one.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely vital. The statistic is really eye opening, it definitely feels accurate based on just my network of friends and a lot of the work that we do. What a great way to reach your audience, you know, especially for topics that they're really interested in. And it can help position your firm as a thought leader. So definitely a 10.
Cool. So moving on, this is kind of maybe a little bit related, and it's just about as important, I think, too, as video. Another trend is mobile friendliness and mobile responsiveness in all advertising platforms, basically. You know, just one notable statistic, maybe you've heard this one. It's probably was pretty well promoted. I remember reading about it at the time, but, in November, 2016, mobile usage surpassed desktop for the first time in history. I think this kind of ties into what we were talking about, with the previous topic video, but I think again, law firms have been a little bit insulated from the move toward mobile because they tend to have older users. But they're just going to, you know, they're not going to avoid this trend. They're just going to be a little bit, the train is a little bit further down the tracks, right? If you're a law firm, but it is absolutely coming. So, you know, my takeaway from this is, you know, this is, your website needs to be designed responsively and needs to display on a lot of different platforms without any problems. So it's not really just about mobile. It's just overall responsiveness. You know, you need, you know, to be able to display on a tablet or on a TV or on a regular desktop monitor, or whatever kind of device people are using, because they're going to be browsing the web from all sorts of different sources and devices. So to me, this is something that you should demand from any web build or any company that handles your web design at this point. And I would rank it as, you know, totally not optional. What do you guys think?
I know definitely from a paid search perspective, this is absolutely vital. I don't have the statistics right in front of me, but I can speak definitely empirically with our clients. We definitely see
just so our listeners know, Kyle, in addition to being our managing editor, for a long time he was our primary paid search specialist. We hired someone full time in that capacity, but Kyle still helps out on that side too, and he's very well informed about it. Kyle is actually an AdWords has an AdWords certification as a paid search expert. So, just a little background on that.
Cool. Thanks, Stephen. I definitely have some experience in that realm. And I still help out writing some copy and reviewing some of the numbers on that side. So I'm fairly well versed in the paid search side. And I know that it's absolutely imperative, especially for display campaigns and remarketing. You know, we all know that people have become pretty attached to their cell phones or their tablets or their what have you. But we always seem to be having some sort of screen experience, sometimes a second screen experience, sometimes a third screen experience. So if you're not able to place those sort of advertisements or any other sort of marketing initiative in a clean, well-fitted paradigm for your audience, you're going to be missing out on a major market segment there.
Yeah, I would add two things probably to this conversation we haven't talked about already. One of them is thinking about the really nitty-gritty functionality of your website. You know, whether that's pop-ups or whether that's how big the buttons are to click on. There are a lot of little tiny nitty-gritty details with mobile that people tend to overlook. It might look really good on a desktop, but when it translates to mobile, it may be non-functional or might not function nearly the same as you think. People don't want to click on little tiny hyperlinks on their phone. They want to click on a button that they can very easily push. And that's something you want to really think about with mobile. Another thing, too, is that people's mobile experience is going to be more app-driven. Moving forward as well. I think, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but a lot more people are increasingly using the app version of websites rather than visiting the websites themselves. And so that would be
something. I just generally think the app version, I don't even know why, I usually think it's going to be better, you know, just more tailored to my device.
Right. So. Yeah, and you think there's more privacy there as well.
Mm-hmm,
that's something people are looking for. And so I think the future of websites is going to be much more app-driven down the road as well. And so that's something that law firms are going to want to start thinking about as they think about mobile friendliness, not just for their website, but about the mobile experience more broadly.
Dave, you kind of took the word right out of my mouth there with experience. Consider the user experience. If you're in an app, you are far, I mean, you don't have a way to necessarily navigate away from whatever it is that you're investigating, whereas you obviously do on a regular browser. So I think that those dedicated potential clients that are further along in the sales process, in the purchasing process, you're definitely going to want to make sure that they're visiting the app with regularity. And then obviously, consequently, you want to have a cleaned up version of any responsive pieces on the app.
I mean, you can see that even now when you're browsing websites on your mobile device, sometimes they'll pop up right away and say, hey, would you rather use the app? You know, and so they'll take you right to the download, or they'll start the download for you. And so that's, again, I think that's something, I think we're further away from that, you know, the sort of the app-driven, app-centric focus, but I do think it's down the road.
Right. Well, I think that maybe the issue there is, you know, the barrier to entry is a little bit higher. Are you saying that you think that more law firms should be developing their own apps? And
yeah, I think translating their website into an app format.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, it's a great look for your law firm if you have an app. I mean, I always just assume when a company has an app that they're just of a little bit another caliber. You know, they've got the resources available to do that. I know it takes more to execute an app, and so I place a little more weight and trust in that company just by the virtue of having an app a lot of times.
Yeah, it's a sign of credibility that you have the resources and the time and the staff available to create it.
Yeah, so definitely.
It is, and even if you only want to launch your app in phases, so if that first phase of your app launch doesn't necessarily have all the same functionality as your website, just the fact that something like that exists, you know, that Stephen and David just both just mentioned, it lends a serious gravitas, I think, towards your firm.
Definitely. And, you know, maybe too, in line with thinking about the user experience, you know, think about the kind of things that people might want to use an app for. So maybe your app isn't just, you know, your firm's branded app, but maybe it's something like a, you know, a family law tool or a personal injury tool,
definitely,
you know, by your firm, you know, brought to you by your firm name.
Yeah, we've talked about actually developing this. We pitched this to one of our clients in the past about making like a immediately after a car wreck app, where like you could just download the app and it would talk you through, here's the five things you need to do, and it would prompt you to say, hey, make sure you take pictures of this, make sure you get this information. And so it's like a little active, engaging checklist that you could download immediately upon the moment that you're in a wreck, and you can start documenting all of that. And then that's evidence for your attorney, and it all can get piped right to them. And
And that could even have, you know, built native camera support and like microphone support and those kind of things. So that could be a really powerful tool. I think that's a great idea. So, you know, going along with this, let's rate mobile in importance. If we gave video a 10, what do we give mobile out of 10?
I hesitate to give it a 10. Because I don't want to give everything a 10, but it's a 10.
Yeah, I know. I feel like, don't worry, they're not all going to be 10s, okay? We kind of led with the stuff that's most important, so we're not just going to give 10s across the board.
I don't want to ruin my own credibility.
I know, I was thinking that too. Like, I was like, can I give it a 9.9?
It feels like a little anachronistic, but I would, it feels like a 10. It really does.
It's a 10, for sure. Okay.
But the other thing is that, you know, a lot of what we're talking about is related for any sort of holistic strategy. Video and mobile go together. I mean, peas and carrots in 2017, right?
Yeah,
Very true. That's kind of why I started off with those two, because I think they're very closely related.
And obviously the printing press isn't a new trend in marketing. So like, we're not going to like rate the printing press as like a negative two.
The printing press would not do well today. It's not at its high point, high watermark. Okay, so moving on, another trend that I kind of identified is influencer marketing. And, you know, maybe you've heard this term, maybe you haven't. If you work in marketing, I guarantee you've heard this term because it's all over the place. I think most people associate influencer marketing, especially with, you know, like social media stars and celebrities. A lot of brands are basically bypassing the traditional ad process. And instead, you know, instead of having a celebrity appear in an ad, they pay, you know, like these YouTube stars or given celebrity to just promote their product or have some kind of cross promotional relationship, you know, through the channels that those celebrities use to get in touch with their fans. So maybe, you know, Coke has, you know, Kim Kardashian, you know, drinking Coke on her Instagram or making some kind of paid Instagram post. And so this sounds, you know, kind of gimmicky, but according to a study from Tapinfluence and Nielsen, influencer marketing leads to 11 times the ROI of traditional advertising. So there is a reason that companies are flocking to this kind of advertising, right? It's not just, you know, the flavor of the moment. They are getting results from this. So the question is, you know, how does this matter for law firms? Obviously, you're not going to go after Kim Kardashian or whoever. Although I did see, you know, in Chicago, they had Will Shatner advertising like a couple local law firms. So maybe you can get like a lower rung celebrity, but probably this isn't going to be the way you want to go for your law firm, right? But I don't think that means that there's no relevant takeaways from this trend. In particular, you know, influencers can mean a lot of things. And I think, you know, maybe in the, you know, kind of lifestyle product sphere, influencers are, you know, celebrities and people who are considered glamorous. But, you know, in the legal marketing sphere, influencers can be, you know, other attorneys, journalists, media professionals, and other peers and colleagues and people that you interact with professionally. So I think, you know, if you can kind of leverage that influencer marketing idea and kind of pivot it to the audiences and the influencers that matter in this sphere, I think there's potential power there. What do you guys think?
Yeah, most definitely. You don't have to go get LeBron James. You just don't. You have to find someone within your niche that people respect, that people are aware of, or that you can maybe increase their credibility, you know, through having their presence in your marketing. I would even go so far as to qualify former clients as influencers, as long as their case was resolved successfully and they had a really great experience with your firm and they are articulate and seem professional, then I think that is even your own clients could be very influential.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think people, when we talk about influencer marketing, you think, oh, someone's got to have 10,000 followers on social media or something. But we all have influencers, even within our very small groups of friends, I think, people mm-hmm. who you trust their advice or that you would go to for advice. And they probably have more than just you. If you trust them, obviously more people probably do as well. And so I think an influencer is anyone who can have influence over their sphere of social contacts. I think I totally agree with you, Kyle, that your former clients or your current clients, or even anyone who kind of like walks into your office is going to be somebody who could potentially be an influencer that would leverage their relationship with people, to portray your firm in a positive light, which is why it's so important to always make a positive influence on everybody you come in contact with. There's some really fascinating stats about, you know, leaving reviews, and talking to people. And one of them is that 95% of people who were surveyed who had a bad experience say they told somebody about it. Mm-hmm. So way more people who have a bad experience are going to go out of their way to tell other people about it. And that's the kind of bad influence that you don't want. What you want are the positive influence.
Yep.
And positive word of mouth and things like that.
Well, especially in the legal industry, you know, you use the word trust, Dave. That's it right there. So an influencer, I think, could be anyone that could inspire trust for your firm. If Kim Kardashian was doing some sort of advertisement for a law firm, I don't know if that would necessarily inspire trust for me personally. But if a former client who had received an adequate settlement based on the facts and the job well done by the firm was in an advertisement, then I might definitely think twice about, okay, well, they've achieved results for this person in the past. She's not a paid spokesperson. This is a real individual. Maybe they can help me.
Yeah, there's a lot of reciprocity. I think that's another a big part of this whole trend is this idea of reciprocity that like influencers get more influence by partnering with you, right? Mm-hmm. That, so like, yeah, in your Coke and Kim Kardashian example is kind of an interesting one, right? Because obviously Kim Kardashian's getting more exposure, right? From Coke,
right?
At the same time that she is influencing people to buy Coke, and so there's that reciprocity there.
It's
and
like I think, a symbiotic type of relationship.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you think about YouTube stars. You know, mm-hmm. YouTube stars, someone who's got a lot of influence on YouTube, they're getting more exposure by partnering with you in the same way that you're getting more exposure by partnering with them. So there's this reciprocal relationship, and I think that's part of the trend that people tend to forget about. They think, oh, people are just leveraging these influencers, but it is a give and take.
Yeah. So the example I would think of that might apply to a law firm is, you know, your media contacts, like a journalist, you know, mm-hmm. who, you know, you're able to form a relationship with them and get them stories. You know, maybe they cover a legal beat or maybe you have a really notable verdict. Either way, maybe you get them a scoop on that story and they come back to you. You know, that gives them a valuable story that they're able to put out. You know, speaking as, you know, someone who's worked as a journalist, you know, sources are everything, you know, having a great source is invaluable. And at the same time, you know, you get your information out there. So it's got that same kind of symbiotic quality. So what are some of the notable tools you guys think are applicable for influencer marketing? I mean, a couple that have occurred to me right off the top of my head are, number one, social media, right? Your law firm's social media presence is going to be huge for reaching out to influencers and forming relationships there. And also email marketing. We always talk about that as a really important way to follow up with past clients and various audiences that you kind of create along the way. So I think both of those are huge components of influencer marketing for law firms. Anything else you guys can think of?
At the risk of beating a dead horse, I'd say video. Mm-hmm. You know, finding a way to promote videos of like your former happy clients, testimonials and things like that. Great way to leverage those influencers.
So for law firms, wrapping this up, what do we give influencer marketing out of 10? We can't give them all 10s. I feel like it's not quite on the same tier as video, but it's very important, right? So what would you?
I'm going to go on a limb and give it a 7.5.
That sounds about right. I was going to say 8.
Yeah, I'd be in that realm. Maybe more of a 6.5. I think it would just depend on who you are able to bring in to help promote your firm. You know, could be 8 or 9, but it all depends on that trust factor and the reciprocity that Dave was speaking about as well. So I'd say 6.5.
All right. So that's where we're going to leave off with this week's episode. But don't forget to check back in 2 weeks because that's just the first half of our discussion. And we've got a lot of other information about 3 more major trends in the content marketing world that could really affect your firm's digital marketing efforts. Just a reminder, if you've got a question or suggestion for the podcast, just send an email to radio@lafleur.marketing and we'll get back to you right away. As always, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Legal Marketing Radio from Lafleur.